Still broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, this is the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
So, he is your host, Ramses Ja. I'm Q Ward, and I just let everybody know, I just work here.
It is our show. It is the QR Code. And this is my partner in crime. Well, I don't want to say partner in crime. People might use that against us. This is my partner in pretty much everything. But we want you to stick around because the rest of the show is going to be interesting if we do our jobs correctly. We're going to be discussing why certain foods are associated with racism. You know, if you are a minority or, you know, something in this country, you might know the feeling of eating food and participating in parts of your culture and kind of worried how that would be well received, you know, in lunchroom and cafeteria in mixed company. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to be talking about a story on capitalism and sports and the intersection of those two. But before we get there, it is time for Q Ward's clapback. And Q Ward is going to talk to us about the moral conflict within police and the military.
Yeah, I think we are watching an example of when loyalty, blind loyalty, turns into betrayal. And you and I, because of the nature of what we do, we spend a lot of time sitting with the weight of this, right? Like police violence, government overreach, and a loud silence from people in power. And when we think about it amongst each other and when we talk about it, we often pose the question to each other and even to some of our leaders when we get a chance to speak to them, how did we get here? And now, more recently, who's going to stop it? Like, that's where that kind of hopeless feeling comes from, because there seems to be nobody in charge that can hold these people accountable. So we're watching in real time, and you and I were on the ground in Los Angeles watching law enforcement and the military being used not to protect American citizens, but to control them.
I remember that, yeah.
To intimidate them, to suppress them, and even live on camera, harm them. The same citizens they claim to serve and protect. And worse is that the people that we were taught to trust, like you get in trouble, call the police. Or if something happens, soldiers in uniform, they're watching what's happening and they're not just following orders. They're clapping for it. They're cheering for it. And I'll touch more on that in a second, but they're calling that patriotism, Ramses. And again, it just feels like betrayal. Unfortunately, this isn't new. It's just, at least in our lifetime, more blatant now, more clear now. Law enforcement in this country has its roots, as we have said many times, and you have highlighted brilliantly, in slave patrols. Mm-hmm. Designed to capture, control, and kill Black people who dared pursue freedom, because we were not considered people, we were considered property, and how dare you have self-determination. That same system evolved into what we now see, a surveillance-heavy, militarized, violent, racially biased, and nearly immune to accountability police agency system throughout the country. And unfortunately, today, it's not just the police, Rams, it's now the military, because the president is calling in the military to do his bidding, and he seems to just be being met with a yes, sir. So when our leaders, most scarily the president, openly suggest restoring the names of Confederate generals to U.S. bases, what are we supposed to do when members of the military cheer that on, when they give that a standing ovation? Like, we don't consider that a red flag, or more, you know, sinister, a declaration like, yeah, we're with him, the military.
Yeah.
So we're claiming to serve the Constitution while praising the Confederacy, who openly fought against the United States in a war and lost.
Sure.
Right. So you're a patriot for America, but let's align ourselves with the foundational enemies
of
our republic and what it stands for. Like, right. It's always been a very confusing thing to me, except it's not. Because as we've talked about before, white supremacy has always had a problem holding white supremacy accountable.
Oof.
It's like the Spider-Man meme, and they get really confused on what we're supposed to do here. right? So the thing that makes me most uncomfortable, Rams, is that we're seeing something that's like deliberately dangerous. And it used to be like a slow merging, but now it's a deliberate, aggressive merging of white supremacist ideology and the uniform, whichever uniform. And some people have stopped pretending to be neutral. The loyalties are clear, not to justice, not to the people, but to power, specifically white power. Where was this urgency when armed men stormed the Capitol, Ramses? Armed white men stormed the Capitol. The National Guard was not called in. White men beat up, assaulted, and harmed police officers. The National Guard was not called in. But when black and brown protesters just speak too loud or demand justice, then the full force of the state shows up. The National Guard, the FBI, the Marines.
Yeah.
So we realize,
like it's a war, yeah.
Yeah, we realize in real time, oh, this is not about the Constitution or public safety or preserving our hierarchy of our country. We just start back at the beginning, right? So the longstanding myth that law enforcement and the military are politically neutral, we are learning in real time, this is not true, as they will tell us at some point, I'm sure, that they're just following orders. But orders have consequences, and just following them is an excuse of every regime ever. Google Nazi Germany, yeah, and see what just following orders meant. So to the officers, to the soldiers, to our quote unquote leaders in uniform, I cannot sit here and think that there are none of you that have a conscience or a bit of humanity in you still. I don't think everybody who enlisted to be a police officer or a member of the armed forces did that to uphold white supremacy. Some did it for social reasons. You know, some did it because it's a family tradition. Some did it to see a world beyond the circumstances they were born into.
You considered it too, once upon a time.
Absolutely. Tried multiple times. Mm-hmm. But this is your test. You've been telling Ramses and I that we were wrong about the police being a white supremacist organization for as long as we've been speaking into microphones. So here's prove your
it.
Moment.
Yeah, prove it. Yeah.
Here's your moment. You swore an oath to the Constitution, not to a politician, not to a person, not to a party, not to a race. So that oath does not change based on who's the president. You don't get to cherry pick patriotism. Confederacy was the enemy. White nationalism is still the enemy. And you're protecting those ideas and telling us to shut up about it. So you're either going to fight for or with us or stay silent and watch us be killed and oppressed and terminated. But you are making a choice and you're making it out loud, because history will not forget this betrayal and the country will not heal. And to the people that say they love it, stand up and start to defend it.
Well, I would clap, but I think you clap loud enough for everyone. That was masterful. All right. Okay. So why certain foods are associated with racism? Quick story. Once upon a time, I was at my old radio station, and I went into the production room where I worked every day. I was making commercials and whatnot, and I walked into my studio, and there was a banana in there. Someone had left it on the mixing console, and I don't need to tell you how that looked to me. So I reacted accordingly. And I'll spare you the whole story, but it turned out that it was kind of a mistake. But I went through all the emotions. I went, you know, everything. And I was like very upset. And everybody else, fortunately, was very upset. Like, who in the world would do that? It was out there in the open for Ramses to see, right? But I tell you that story not to, you know, pull that story up necessarily, but I tell you that story to suggest that I've always known that eating a banana in front of people could be problematic. It's almost like embarrassing, because I know that that's one of the like lowest hanging racist jokes that people make about those of us with brown skin. Although chimpanzees technically have white skin, somehow we're associated with our brown skin with like monkeys and whatnot, right? So eating a banana, which is also associated with monkeys, is too easy for people to, you know, use against us, to make fun of us, right? So I'm very, very conscious if I ever eat a banana of who's around me. I'm also very conscious of that when it comes to watermelon. I'm also very, and you know what? I'm not the only person, because I know Asian people have certain foods and they're like, you know, I enjoy this with my family. I don't enjoy this in mixed company. The Hispanic people, these foods are for my people. These are for certain celebrations. We don't do this in mixed company. And I suspect that a lot of that, I know that some of it at least, but I suspect a lot of that is perhaps for the same reasons, right? So, you know, I can only tell black stories because I've only lived a black life. And, you know, Q, the same is true of you. So I'm going to give a little bit of context here. I'm going to share from the Boston Globe. With the Confederacy's defeat and slavery's end, early black entrepreneurship was bolstered by women selling their fried chicken and other home-cooked foods to hungry white railroad passengers at train stops. Likewise, watermelon was a cash crop and a token of financial independence for the formerly enslaved. But white Southerners viewed any modicum of black success as an affront to their own sense of dominance. It wasn't long before grotesque caricatures of black people with the same foods they used to empower themselves appeared on silverware, sheet music, and salt and pepper shakers. Syndicated cartoons and newspapers meant that racist imagery that began in the South didn't stay in the South. Those renderings also emphasized that since fried chicken and watermelon are traditionally eaten with the hands, black people and these foods were uncouth and unclean. My house that I bought in Arizona, in the backyard of the house right now, it's too high for me to get to, but there are these old like tins nailed up on like, there's like an awning, right? There are these old tins like in the corner of the house, the one area I couldn't get to. And there are these racist caricatures of black folks, like with their watermelon and the big, like cartoonish lips. So whoever had this house before me, whoever put that up there, felt like this was cool too, right? But let's get into the weeds a little bit. Okay, so watermelon. Q and I, we talked about this once upon a time. So watermelon was considered a treat for black people because at a point, you know, we didn't have refrigeration in this country that didn't exist in the world, to be honest with you. But ice cream was like this delectable treat, right? And so black people didn't get that, you know, but if a black person did very well, I'm talking like slave times or whatever. The equivalent for a black person would be watermelon, right? So watermelon in black circles became kind of like slave food, like soul food, because, you know, the premium food went to white folks. Everyone knows the history of soul food, you know, the slop and the scraps and the leftover innards and stuff from the animal was given to the slaves, and the premium cuts were given to, you know, the people that owned the slaves, right? Same is true with ice cream. That went to the people that owned the slaves. But if a slave did well enough, they could get some watermelon, no problem there, right? So when slaves became free, one of the things that was a part of the diet for black folks was watermelon, you know, that just become a part of the culture and so forth. And they were cheap to acquire. They were easy to grow and sell. And this became economic empowerment for black people that were just emerging from slavery, that had a piece of land that they could work and pay rent to, pay shares to, whatever. And so, you know, jealous Southern white folks became enraged at this and started to associate watermelon and black people and drew them together in cartoonish ways. And of course, that was exported throughout the rest of the country. So this is kind of the origin story of black people love watermelon, right? Fried chicken, that became like a delicacy after slavery. You know, chicken is like, again, a little bit more accessible. And, you know, black people being able to get chicken instead of like pig innards showed like mobility and so forth. But, you know, now that everyone can eat the same food, it was almost like a shame game. You know, black people love chicken. Oh, they love chicken. Chicken is normal for us, but they love it. It's like the ultimate for them, right? And, you know, people love to cut off our history, our ties to our history. You weren't a slave. Why do you want reparations? You didn't pick, I didn't own a slave, all that sort of stuff, right? People love doing that. But history matters because history is how we got to where we are. If you didn't know why black people are associated with watermelons, without history, you would just think that it just exists that way and you would never have any insight into what it's like to be a black person, to know this, to feel this, and to have this be a part of your culture and to feel ashamed when you're sharing it in mixed company. I don't want to talk the rest of this up, but suffice it to say that, you know, all of these things are associated with some, you know, black people like grape soda. You know, all this sort of stuff is associated in some way with some racist undertaking or time frame in this country, just like most other things. Now, I know I talked up a lot, but I wanted to paint a full picture here. Q, you know, your thoughts here.
Well, it's just you talked about in mixed company. Mm-hmm. My first residency as a DJ, a part of my rider was that the people had to feed me. Mm-hmm. And the DJ booth was up on a stage in the corner of the room in the front of the building so everyone could see you. And I arrived and it had this like elaborate setup, a nice sofa and a table. And it was right by the DJ booth. And it was really, really nice. And the chef made fried chicken, French fries, and watermelon.
Yes.
I'm on stage. You know, I'm about to start DJing. It's, you know, it's like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. I mean, yeah, 10 or 11 p.m. Yeah. And I'm on stage with a fresh plate of fried chicken and watermelon.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is fried chicken and watermelon is delicious.
Good. It's so good. And you, I mean,
it's fantastic.
Amazing.
But I'm like,
I can't eat
outwardly
this
offended.
Yeah.
And then the chef comes out and it's a Mexican guy. And of course, he didn't mean any offense by it.
Sure. Yeah.
But he's Mexican. I'm black. And the whole room full of people was almost all white.
Yeah.
So I had to like take that to go and eat it later because I can't even enjoy this. It smells amazing too.
That's what I would have did too.
But I couldn't even enjoy it because I'm on stage in a room full of white people and chicken and watermelon. It was just not something I could even consume comfortably in that setting because of the way we were set up to be looked at as, you know, primitive for, like you said, eating with our hands. Pretending that chicken and watermelon is only good to black people is an insane thing to do. But once again, that narrative machine successfully pulled off that rebrand as if any of those industries would exist if only black people partake.
You know, that I think that's a good segue to, you know, what we want to talk about in terms of entertainment, because you were talking about the intersection of capitalism and sports. And, you know, you famously worked in sports or sports settings for many different facets of your career. So talk to us about that intersection, like kind of what came about over the past weekend.
You know, it's a really interesting thing, man. We often talk about what happened to us all having the same ideas of what black people wanted and needed in this country, right? We used to kind of all stand on the same side of the street, walking towards or fighting against the same things. Mm-hmm. And from very early on, being exceptionally talented got you access to rooms, even in rooms where they hated you, even in rooms where if you weren't the entertainment, you wouldn't be allowed in. If you were the entertainment, you were. And that system and that illusion started back before we were freed from slavery. Let's give one of those slaves access to the house. Mm-hmm. Give them a position where he or she is kind of the authority. Give them a little bit nicer clothes. Provide them one more extra meal. And they start to see that they're exceptional and that they have access to privilege. And without even having to teach them to, they will protect that privilege. They will work for and protect the system that is directly designed to oppress and really socially imprison them. And this is where the exception ain't the rule, bro. It's like capitalism's greatest trick. Mm. It's making the exception seem like the rule. And we've been sold that dream and like taught that capitalism is a fair game, like the idea of meritocracy. anybody can win if they work hard enough and they want it bad enough and they hustle long enough. But one thing about my brother Ramses is if the data doesn't back it up, there is nothing for us to talk about. And what we know, Rams, is that the data just it doesn't back this narrative.
Doesn't.
Social mobility is actually shrinking. The wealth gap is growing. And most people that we know, I don't even mean like the people who are considered homeless or transient or impoverished. I'm talking about regular working, day-to-day, quote unquote, used to be middle class people, are one emergency away from homeless. One unexpected thing to happen to their house or an appliance or their car or their job. And there's their life and the way that it's set up would collapse. But somehow we still believe in and subscribe to this capitalist system. And I guess the biggest question, and hopefully one that we can help answer today, is why? Like, how did this brilliant distraction strategy work? And how in the entertainment industry and, more specifically, film, TV, music, and professional sports have helped amplify one of the biggest lies ever told. So if you think of capitalism as a deity, the holy trinity to capitalism would be Hollywood, hip hop, and the NBA or the NFL or just professional sports in general, right?
Okay, I see what you're
Because you get Denzel Washington, Viola Davis, Oprah Winfrey, Sammy Davis Jr., Michael Jackson, Kendrick Lamar winning a Pulitzer Prize, Denzel and Halle Berry and Sidney Poitier winning the Oscars, LeBron James building schools and becoming a billionaire, Barack Obama becoming the president. Look, black people, you can do it too. And then you end up with us in some cases, not in all cases, because we all live in this capitalist society and do our best to participate as well we can to make a life for ourselves, but we stop fighting against it because we think we can win at this game. And this thing that we should not feel connected to, we do because we start believing that the system works. And what made me even want to talk about this was a discussion I had with a young black woman in Detroit while we were there, who was passionately telling me that you and I, on the discussion of White Lives Matter, should have been more exploitative and more capitalist in that endeavor and made some money and impacted the community with that money. And trying to explain to her that there were no virtues in doing that. If millions of kids went to school wearing those shoes and that shirt, what it would have meant to their classmates. For us to make a couple of dollars, we couldn't have made enough money to change the world for our people. So then, because of that, there was no dollar amount anybody could have offered us short of a trillion, where we could have just taken all of us, not just all of us black, but all of us poor, all of us not fighting against ourselves and created something different. Right? So the success of like this propaganda machine, film, music, sports, they didn't liberate us. They just gave some of us that are exceptional access to the capital gains. But those leagues, those teams, those networks, those labels, who do you think owns them, Rams?
I know exactly where you're going with that,
Who do you think controls them, Rams?
It's not us.
Who do you think creates the infrastructure from which they allow you to play that game inside of?
You
So
know,
capitalism adores. No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
so real quick, just to make your point, I think it was Chris Rock that said something about Shaquille O'Neal. He's like, we think that Shaquille O'Neal is rich, but wealthy should be the pursuit. He said this more comically inclined, I guess, but he said, Shaq is rich. And he like mimics a guy writing Shaq a check and says, here, Shaq, go buy yourself another one of those cars that bounce around. And then he goes, the guy that signs Shaq's check is wealthy, right? And so, to your point about who is like the invisible hand behind these big names that we know, they're the people with like real power. This is part of why we would applaud someone like a Madea, what's his name?
Tyler Perry.
There you go. Someone like that. Oprah too, to her credit, but she's shared that broadly. I think Tyler Perry's a little bit more focused on empowering black folks. But anyway, okay, back to you. I was just saying that you're right, and that's a great
No,
example.
no. Capitalism loves a black success story.
It helps continue to sell it to the next generation.
Capitalism loves a black success story. Look at Jay-Z. Look at Oprah. Mm-hmm. Look at Michael Jordan, Ramses. If they made it, what's your excuse?
Well, I don't rap. I'm not a TV personality. And
buy your bootstraps, Ramses, and reach the success that they did.
Yeah.
And this is how that system will gaslight the rest of us into fighting on its behalf.
Yeah.
And that system, in order to exist, needs for some of us to have nothing, not little, nothing.
Can I make this live too?
Please.
So what you're saying is that capitalism needs there to be some unemployment rate. So some people have to have no jobs in order to keep wages, workers' wages low. And that's not true that's communism. That's not true under socialism. That's what I'm trying to say.
So representation matters. We hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. But representation without redistribution is just decoration. Like if the people in power, if those hands don't change, then that representation is just marketing. It's just good PR. So we have some black billionaires now, but our communities are still under-resourced, over-policed, and gentrified into not existing anymore. Mm-hmm. So when ownership, land, and capital are still locked behind very, very high racist walls, then what does it mean? Is that freedom? I don't think so, right? So we can't keep pointing to like the glow and ignoring the darkness.
Yeah.
Capitalism does not give us power. It gave us a stage. It gives you and I a spotlight and microphones.
Gave Shaq a bouncing car.
But it also provides a soundtrack to our struggle, right? We gonna be all right.
Yeah.
If God got us, right? But it's a contract that we can't even afford to sign. Capitalism has used our stories to sell its games, even if those games are never meant to be fair. It makes it look like it can be, though. So yeah, there's the success stories, but we don't need it anymore. We have enough success stories. We always knew we could, so that didn't prove anything new. What we need is ownership and access and truth, not performance. Because as Ramses has said many a times, our goal was never just to sit at the table. Our goal was to own the table. Mm. And maybe at some point, and this is me dreaming out loud, I'm going to sound like my brother, we can tear the whole table down.
Yeah, I like that.
And build our own.
All right, let me say this, just because I think it helps that live a little bit more. It almost sounds like capitalism is like the lottery, because whenever somebody wins the lottery, they certainly parade them around like, hey, you can win too. But, you know, most people will not win. Most people will not become billionaires. It doesn't matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter what. It just won't work that way. And it's even less likely for people from historically marginalized communities. Anyway, I thought that would help out a little bit. So that is going to do it for us here at the QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, please use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. Also, be sure to check us out on all social media at Civic Cipher. I have been your host, Ramses Jha.
And I am Q Ward. I still work here.
You can find us both on all social media. And listen, before we go, I just want to say, you know, I know that sometimes we talk about heavy stuff, but for those of you that make it to the end, it really does matter to us. We salute you. Be sure to come back and join us as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the QR Code.